Parenting is hard, and parenting a teenage girl can be especially challenging. Dave Barry, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and author of 38 books of fiction and nonfiction, writes about family and parenting and other things he says he knows very little about. In his latest book, You Can Date Boys When You're 40, it's published by Putnam. I'm very pleased that it brings Dave Barry back to our show. Hello. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Your daughter, Sophie, is now a young teenager, but you also have an older son.
I do.
How has having a daughter been different for you than having a son?
It's an extreme difference. Basically, and puberty was the difference. They were both, you know, up until that point.
They both had puberty.
They both did have it, and I take some credit for that. You know, you train them right. But with Rob, who is, by the way, a reporter at the Wall Street Journal, he lives here in New York City. So with Rob, you know, boys' puberty is kind of like they become larger, hairier, smelly versions of themselves. But they're still themselves. They're still boys, you know, essentially, and they're still interested in the same kind of idiotic thing that boys are in things. Whereas with Sophie, with girls, it's like this massive transformation. And in this little girl suddenly is this woman. Every parent of a daughter knows what I'm talking about. And if you're a dad, this is a terrifying thing. Because I mean, you know, already it was kind of tenuous, the things that I could talk to her about, you know. And then suddenly I felt like there was nothing I could talk to her about.
Well, did you feel, you and your wife, that it was easier to raise the boy or the girl?
It's definitely, well, it depends how you define easy. In terms of Rob, it was like a question of knowing the way to the emergency room. He was on that 10th fracture is free program. You know, he's like always falling out of things, jumping off of things. You know? And Sophie's never done anything like that. She's a very safe thing. But what is scary is that now she's 14 now. Boys show up all the time. They're on the lawn. They're on the roof. They're like squirrels. They're everywhere.
And when did you start worrying about her future dating life?
It's the instant I realized that there were boys interested in her, because I'm a boy. I mean, I was one. I'm a male. And we're scum, let's be honest, right?
So you're projecting yourself into these kids?
And I'm basing it on every guy I've ever known as long as I've been alive.
What about your son when he started dating? How old was he?
I didn't care. I'm just saying. I was like, you go for it, Rob. Good for you. Dating. Yeah. With Sophie, it's more like, wait a minute. I was thinking of getting a trap, like for a boy trap, which would be humane. I want to stress this. It would be no harm to the boy, but it would be baited. It would be sitting outside the front door, and, you know, like I'd hear a clang, and then go out there, and there'd be a boy in it. And I live in Miami. I would take him out to the Everglades and release him in a humane manner. That's how I would handle it. But my wife doesn't do that. She lets them in the house because she doesn't know, because she's not a male.
Obviously, you're going to allow your daughter to date before she's 40, but why even make that joke? I mean, why not?
Well,
19, 21.
I don't know. It's just like I thought, by 40, I'll probably be dead, so it won't be as much. It's troubling to me. Although I still think I might be right to have her take my ashes along in like a stern-looking urn. So if you go on a date, this is take your dad.
Now, obviously, you made the point that your wife sees this differently. She lets the boys in. She probably remembers what she was like when she was 14. So do you have big discussions about this?
We discuss it all the time. Not with Sophie, of course, because that's another change. My wife tries to talk to her, and I sometimes even try to talk to her. But she's 14, and she is connected by the phone to all her friends, which is every other 14-year-old girl in North America. They're all in this one nexus of girls, and each one emits a text about every 10 to 12 seconds. So there's a lot of communication that she has to keep up with, and she can't take her eyes off the screen for 1 second to look at us, because she could miss like some really important, 30 or 40 text string there,
You write about an ultimate sacrifice you made for your daughter. You took her to a Justin Bieber concert.
It was terrifying.
This is before Justin Bieber suddenly became
a jerk. Yeah. She loved him. This is when she was 13, she loved him. Now she's 14, she doesn't love him anymore. She loves something called One Direction, which is worse in a way because there's five of them. But last year when she loved Justin Bieber, she and her friend Stella wanted to go to this concert, and they took invitations to their bat mitzvahs. And they had written little notes to Justin Bieber, inviting him to their bat mitzvahs. And we're in this like giant, the American Airlines Arena. It's like insane. There's 17,000 people, 8 of whom were dads. We're sitting there with our shoulders hunched over, looking at our phones. Everyone else was a screaming girl, basically.
Wait, so you were doing during the Justin Bieber concert what your daughter does during dinner.
I don't do it other times, but it was hard to watch because, like, I'm old, and I remember the day when I used to go to concerts, let's say the Rolling Stones, and they would hold still. They'd put them, you know, the Rolling Stones would have like their, all their stuff set up in one place, and they would stand there. Or you go to, you know, they didn't move around. Or you go see Gladys Knight and the Pips, you know. Gladys Knight would stand there. The Pips would move around, but maybe 3 yard range for the Pips. I guess not a big long
range. They did dance steps.
Yeah, yeah. But just a Justin Bieber concert, and I think a lot of them like this, it's like a track meet. He has this, you know, like dozen backup dancers, and they come down out of the ceiling, they come out of the walls, they come up the stairs, they run around, they're sprinting around, sprinting past you. So I'm not going to watch that.
Well, what about the music itself? Parents have always disliked the music of their children's generation.
Yes, and in this case, they're right.
your parents were wrong when you liked the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, they were wrong when they didn't like rock and roll, but now, I realize what I sound like here. But I do have to say, I mean, to watch my daughter and her friends react to this guy, this like guy running around taking his shirt off, you know, it's hard to watch.
Well, you were lucky that he didn't take them up on the invitation to the bat mitzvahs.
Yes, I suppose I am. I could see them because they had to fight their way through the crowd. It was like their last chance. He was like sprinting by, and I could see these two envelopes fluttering in the light, but he just trampled right across them, and that was the end of the bat mitzvah.
My guest is Dave Barry, whose latest book is You Can Date Boys When You're 40. A number of your books have been inspired by the changes in your life, like when you turned 40 yourself, and then another one when you turned 50. And in this one, you meditate on death.
And
you worry that you won't be around to chaperone your daughter after you die.
Except in urn form. Yes, I do worry about that.
You want her to put the urn with your ashes?
Right between her and the date. You know, just a little reminder that Dad is still watching. I have a chapter on death. I planned my own funeral in there. I think everyone should do that because funerals can be boring and you don't want yours to get out of, you know, people to go away thinking that it was no fun.
On the other hand, the people who are left behind are worried if they decide not to follow the instructions.
Well, that's why mine are in a book. I mean, I expect it to begin the way I have it begin, which
is... You have a lot of witnesses.
The casket is carried in by mimes. And the reason I choose mimes is because there won't actually be a casket. They'll mime carrying in the casket. And then they have the problem with what to do with mimes. But that's why I also have Navy SEAL snipers on hand. So it's all been figured out ahead of time.
Now, you read 50 Shades of Grey, you say, because you wanted to better understand women. Do you think that all women are interested in the kinkier things that are in those novels?
Well, let me say this. There's a reason. So there must be some reason why 100 million women bought this book. And one man, which was me, I bought it and read it.
Did you like it?
No. I found it.
Which was worse?
I found it hilarious.
That book or Justin Bieber?
Oh, that's a tough call because Justin Bieber at least only lasted 3 hours. And it took me years, it felt like, to finish 50 Shades of Grey. But
you read all three or just one?
No, I'm done with the first one. My goal was to determine what it was about this book that attracted women so much. Okay, part of it I get. The guy is a billionaire and he's really handsome and he's, you know, totally obsessed with this woman. So I guess what women, and not to suggest that women are shallow, maybe they would like the idea of a handsome billionaire being interested. But the part that I couldn't get is like the whole plot. And this is a spoiler alert for those of, you know, three or four people who have not read 50 Shades of Grey. The whole book consists of him trying to get her to allow him to tie her up and flog her. He goes on and on and on about that. And she doesn't want to, you know, because and he does and she doesn't want to. But he's, and, you know, and you think, well, then why don't you just dump him? Because he's a hot billionaire. That's why she doesn't just dump him. So finally,
so the trade-off is either giving up on the money or getting
whipped. She professes to not care about the money. On the other hand, he is a billionaire, and that gets mentioned at least every other page, along with his hotness. So finally, again, this is the ultimate spoiler alert. I am giving away the rosebud moment here. She lets him tie her up and flog her. And guess what?
She likes it.
No, it hurts to be flogged. So she doesn't like it. So they break up. So like that's it. The book ends, and that I'm thinking like, why was that so appealing to so many women? So I went to my wife and I said, "Do you secretly want me to tie you up and flog you?" And she goes, "No." So I have no back to square one. I have no idea what that book was about.
Well, there are two other books. There must be some flogging somewhere down the line.
I think at some point, and this is, I guess, the key to it, she converts him. So he becomes the ultimate human being, a 27-year-old hot billionaire who doesn't want to tie you up and flog you. which is, that's a bar that's pretty high for the rest of us guys to meet. I mean, I can do the first part about not wanting to tie any button flogging. The hot billionaire part, I cannot do.
You say we're becoming a nation of illiterates.
Oh, yeah. I have a whole section on grammar, which is actually based – when I used to write a regular weekly newspaper column, I had a character I would do every now and then called Ask Mr. Language Person. And he was the world's worst grammar authority. He was the anti-William Sapphire. And he was just – everything he did was wrong. And I used to get these wonderful letters because it would be a column of 800 words containing at least 50 flagrant errors in grammar or punctuation or whatever. And I get these letters from usually school teachers. They say, I'm a school teacher, and before you go presenting yourself as an expert on grammar, you should. And they would have circled two.
They didn't get the joke?
Didn't get that it was a joke, and they would only have found two of the, they have 48 errors still there. So anyway, this I decided I'm going to do a grammar chapter, and it explains things, in clear, simple language, like why it's wrong to end a sentence with a preposition.
Is it?
Hitler did it, and that's why you should not.
Yeah, but Germans end their sentences with the verb.
Yeah. Well, actually, you're sort of falling into the school teacher trap here, Leonard. Nothing I say in that chapter makes any sense.
Well, what advice would you give to help young people improve their writing skills? Seriously.
I'm serious. They should buy a well-written humor book. I would recommend that there's a short essay format, something, currently available, maybe with a blue cover. And I'd say that from the heart to help people.
And since your book has blue cover. You always written humor. Is it just that's the way your mind works?
The simple answer, and it's really true, is I have no other skill. I have no useful skill. My mind always went in that direction. I was the kid who in class was always trying to, partly listening to what the teacher was saying, but partly thinking, what could I say right here that would crack up everybody right around me? And so that's, I never got over that.
And that's why I was, too, one of the class clowns.
Were you really?
Yeah, and one of the reasons that I graduated high school with a C average.
But wait, were you actually elected class clown? Because I was. Pleasantville High School, Pleasantville,
New
York.
And in our senior year, we had a class where a teacher said, well, you can pick anybody to teach today's class.
They always
picked
you.
Me and my best friend. In 2004, and of course we were ridiculous. In 2004, you wrote in your Miami Herald column about the intense pressure you and your wife were going through to pick a preschool for your daughter.
Yeah.
So your daughter's been a problem for you for a while now.
Yeah. Well, and we live in Miami. It's nothing like I understand the pressure here in New York to.
But you still were worried about getting her into the school that's going to eventually lead to Harvard?
Right. I mean, the pressure is like if you don't make the right decision then it'll lead to a wrong decision, this domino effect, and your child will not get into Harvard.
Do you think she's going to wind up in Harvard? She's 14 now.
I don't know.
But 4 years to go.
But we've done everything right so far, except let her go through puberty. That was a mistake. If I could correct that, I would. But it's a little too late now.
Now, this book, although the title is about your daughter dating, it's really about everything. Isn't
it? Yeah.
Everything that's occurred to you. One of the questions that occurred to me is, which did you enjoy more this year, the Olympics or the Oscars?
Well, you're talking about the Winter Olympics?
Yes.
My wife was there. My wife's a sports writer. So she was in Sochi. So I was sort of more following that. The Oscars, I fell asleep after, what's his first name? Jared Leto.
Yeah, Jared Leto.
So I missed the selfie and I missed the pizza delivery. But as far as I can tell, I didn't miss too much else in the 3.5 hours that I was sleeping while everybody else was watching.
Well, my problem with the Oscars is I never agree with the winners. So that's... And I could go down the line, I guess, two or three I thought were good. The rest, I would have chosen other people or other films.
Did you agree with 12 Years a Slave?
I'm not going to talk about it, although I do think that film was a serious indictment of slavery.
It's wrong.
It really did convince me that slavery is wrong. Yeah.
This is why we listen to public radio, to find out the issues.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of my listeners hadn't figured that out yet. Although if they see that film, they will come away with that feeling. At the end of the book, you give advice about how to become a professional author. What are some of the things that you recommend?
Well, the easiest way, the way everybody does it, if you really want to succeed in this business, is write a letter to somebody who is already a successful professional author and ask that person to get you published.
Uh-huh.
And that works.
Does that work?
Every time.
You get a lot of people published?
Yeah, everybody does. If, give Stephen King a call. He will drop everything he is doing.
Do you actually get letters like that?
All the time. And it's usually from people. It's like infuriating. They haven't written anything. They've not written one thing, but they have an idea for a book. And they would like me to get them published. And I'm thinking, well, you haven't actually even written the book yet.
One of the very first talk shows I did, I was with a literary agent many, many, many years ago. And we took calls, and I said, the only question you can't ask is, how do I get an agent? So the first call is, how do I get an agent?
I need an agent. Yeah. It's terrifying.
And that's... Well, people do think that there is some kind of, there are secrets.
They think there's
there.
A shortcut. And I always say it's kind of like if you showed up outside of a symphony orchestra and said, I really want to play the violin. And they went, well, have you practiced it? You know, no, but I'm really interested in it, looing to do it. You know, can you help me out here? And I don't mean it's exactly like that, but because there are, I guess, some people who've never written anything who have this innate talent and could do it. But there are a lot of people who've never written anything who would like to be professional writers. I don't know how they think that's going to happen.
Now, I counted the number of books you've published, 38. I don't know how that compares with Joyce Carol Oates, but
well, we
must
have a
be going
thing,
neck and neck.
Running thing. Joyce and I were like, you know, we're always mocking each other, you know.
But you also were writing a column for the Miami Herald. Were you
And Joyce was not, just for the record.
Were you using the stuff that you wrote in the Miami Herald?
Yeah, some of these books are actually just collections of columns, I have to admit. And none of them contain useful information, and some of them have a lot of white space. So really, I'm kind of behind, I think, Joyce in the
Dave Barry will be giving a reading and signing books tonight at 7 at the Barnes & Noble store on 82nd Street and Broadway. And then again tomorrow night at 7 at the Barnes & Noble store in Paramus, New Jersey. And the book is You Can Date Boys When You're 40, Dave Barry on Parenting and Other Topics He Knows Very Little About. It is published by Putnam. And it's always a pleasure to have you.
It is. Thank you. I mean, for me. Thank you.
Me too.